I'm sure I'm not the only one feeling how it is shockingly October already. And therefore, alongside over 200 other UU congregations across the country, we begin another conversation together this month on what it means to be a community of healing. No doubt a reflection of Rosh Hashanah, no doubt the work that comes when we are truly in covenant with one another. Through the goodie bag of resources that the UUA sends out each month, I was introduced to an author named Fred Recklow, who has written a book called Partners in Care, Medicine and Ministry Together. And in this, Recklow asks that question that I posed during the story for all ages, what is the difference between healing and curing? Cure, he writes, may occur without healing. Healing may occur without cure. Cure alters what is. Healing offers what might be. Cure is an act. Healing is a process. Cure seeks to change reality. Healing embraces reality. Cure takes charge. Healing takes time. Cure avoids grief. Healing assumes grief. Cure speaks. Healing listens. I met Tara's father only a few weeks before he died. A man born and raised and planted in the heart of Nebraska, one might say he didn't have the strongest relationship with either of his lesbian daughters, or for that matter, with either of his other children, to be fair. But Gary was diagnosed with cancer again, and the tumors had moved to his brain, and Tara and I were engaged, so of course we went. And there, next to his recliner, sat his cowboy boots and the hat that was only ever taken off to get in and out of the car because it was too tall. And here was a frail man who I had only ever heard hard stories about. And there were the eyes that I only knew on Tara's face, but now mostly closed on a dying man's, whose heart had also always been mostly closed. But as the stories tend to go, by the end of the week and by the end of my time with my would-have-been father-in-law, I heard Gary say to the hospice nurse who asked who the other women were in the kitchen, Tara's sister's wife and me, he responded, my other two daughters. Gary couldn't be cured. And I wouldn't say everything had been healed in that brief time between diagnosis and death. But even after his passing, there is nuance now in his relationship with his children. And there is some understanding or context, if not acceptance, in who and how he was. I think a lot about Tara's dad these days leading up to the election. And as the world continues to sound and become more polarized, knowing this is not a man I would know today if it wasn't for the tumors that opened each of our hearts. He was a flat character for a long time, heard simply from the other end of the phone by way of single-syllable responses and Tara's impressions of him, dropping the A in America, blaming the Mexicans for the Spanish instructions on his chemo pills. What were any of us missing? Blood and partner would ask one another as another year passed without contact. It is, of course, the trap we have all fallen into, the simplification of one another. It has been the cure for our discomfort and lack of understanding always. The basic survival instinct in classification and deciding who is safe and who our people are and where we can feel whole and best yet affirmed. Between Facebook and the election, even within our own walls, banner or no banner, we have lost our shape, our nuance, the things that make any one of us more than a demographic or a data point. And it's not to suggest that we or they, whoever your they is, don't behave as if we are that predictable or flat, or even that this is a time in which we can be fluid in how our lives illustrate our values. But there is grief in this simplification, and repercussions too. Cultural, large, and unconscious grief, anger, and despair in how hard and formalized, how categorized, and therefore disconnected we've seemingly become. My mother and her sister have stopped speaking with any kind of kind rapport. One of nine and the only one with her political views, it's not an uncommon thing for her siblings to go quiet every 4 years. But this time is different. And I don't mean for her, but for all of us. Relationships have become strained, if not severed. Things have been shared, assumptions made, proclamations that can't be unsaid and maybe shouldn't be, can't be unheard and maybe shouldn't be. If nothing else seems to connect us these days, it is that across the aisle and regardless of politics, many of us are mourning our intimate and beloved relationships because of the public and abrasive outside. I have wondered, what is the spiritual response to such a time as this? What balm waits for our chapped hearts to sink into? "We think we get over things," begins Albert Hofstickler's poem, Cure. We don't get over things. Or say we get over the measles, but not a broken heart. We need to make that distinction. The things that become a part of our experience never become less a part of our experience. How can I say it? He continues. The way to get over a life is to die. Short of that, you move with it. Let the pain be the pain, not in the hope that it will vanish, but in the faith that it will fit in. And be then not any less pain, but true to form. Because anything natural has an inherent shape and will flow towards it. And a life is as natural as a leaf. That's what we're looking for. Not the end of a thing, but the shape of it. This time in each of our lives, and therefore in each of our relationships, will live with us. Not be cured, but will somehow make its way into who we are and how we consider one another. Now, that's not so much a word of hope, I know that. But what it is an acknowledgement of something after this time, of movement, and therefore of possibility of healing that embraces reality, that takes time, and most important, but hardest still, assumes grief. We forget today and in our culture that grief is a path to healing, and really the only path, in fact, or so I believe. Grief is that gift that in its loud and dirty unsettling is actually an affirmation of life. It is the thing that reminds us how, no matter who we are, our fates are bound together. And in a world where such connection, such basic kinship is assaulted daily, grief is the thing that reminds our indigenous souls from where we came and to where we will go together. The anger, the yelling, the picket lines and the protests, the hurtful emails, the phone calls, now silent, it's all grief of one kind of another, battling grief not so different than its enemies. But it's been so long since we've ripped our clothes or hired mourners to help us through such a time of such sadness. We don't recognize it. We don't know how to name the anger as despair, and so instead the divisions grow deeper and time ticks on, the tumors grow larger, and another year goes by with a version of the other in our heads and hearts that's uglier, but still easier in its simplicity to keep at bay. It's odd to say, but Gary's cancer, it was like a new person showed up to the family system. All of us going on with our lives, divided by geography and past wounds and painful assumptions, and then something differentiated came along and changed how it all worked, made us rethink how things had to be, who was in charge, and what mattered. If healing is our goal at the end of this, not a cure, but health and reconciliation, if any of that is a possibility in our hearts, it's going to mean that someone has to start acting differently. Someone or some group, some community is going to have to show the rest of the big, large, functionally hurting family that it can choose something different for itself. It may not heal everything, that change in behavior, but it just may give us all a bit more nuance, a bit more shape to be remembered by. I want to leave you with one last thought this morning. Ruby Sales, the civil rights icon, asked a generation ago, "Where does it hurt?" It's a question we scarcely know how to ask in public life now, she says, but it gets at the human dynamics that we are living and reckoning with. Where does it hurt? Maybe we begin here, naming the places that feel most wounded in our hearts, in our own spirits, and then wondering, perhaps wondering out loud across the aisle into our bloodline, or perhaps even into the Facebook feed, where does it hurt? Wouldn't it be something if that grief connected us once more? If this despair in the end helped to heal us all? May we be gentle on ourselves, tender with the wounded, and have the courage to see that this is each of us. May it be so, and blessed be.